You're listening to a podcast from the Cinema Geekly Podcast Network. We're the geeks you deserve and the ones you need right now.
It's a brand new episode of I'm a Doctor, Not a Podcast, Cinema Geekly Star Trek Podcast. It's the Chief Petty Officer, Anthony Lewis, here, along with the Fleet Admiral himself, Ben Knight. Hello, Ben.
Hello. Yeah, now normally I would have a bit of shtick here, but all I can say is I've been very, very, very busy because, you know, since we last spoke.
Yeah.
Well,
6 months ago, actually.
6 months ago,
for this podcast purposes,
during the course of that time, as we're about to discuss, no doubt, we've somehow managed to completely get over everything that's happened prior to this in the story of Discovery, and the Federation is back exactly where it should be, and as if nothing had ever happened.
Yeah,
so you can imagine. Well, you know, off air, that's taken a bit of work, and me in my esteemed role as Fleet Admiral, I've had to balance up all of the rebuilding of the Federation alongside being low-key evil, because, you know, Fleet Admiral.
Also, yeah.
So there's been a lot going on. Thank God, if we even still believed in God in the 32nd century, for Burnham and Booker, because as we all know, without them, literally nothing is possible.
No.
And it's nice of them both to be here to produce this podcast, assume.
100%.
I'd do anything without them. But there we go.
We're here to talk about episodes 1 and 2 of Star Trek Discovery, season 5, the final season of Star Trek Discovery, and I'm sure by the time this season ends, you and I will have a probably lengthy conversation about the legacy of this show, which I think has its positives and its negatives.
Jesus, talk about triggering listeners. You don't know, listener, then Google it.
There's going to be so much to talk about, and but for now, let's just stick with the episode. So we begin with episode 1 of season 5 called Red Directive, and it begins with Michael, Adira, Paul, Hugh, and Sylvia together celebrating the millennium of the Federation. Although, you know, because of the burn, there's a little bit of a, you know, give or take some years in this celebration. Stamets is also upset that the Federation is shutting down the Spore Drive program in favor of another type of propulsion. Burnham is still hurt by Cleveland Booker's actions in the previous season. Saru has received a job offer to serve as a Federation ambassador, but is torn by his loyalty to his fellow Discovery crew. Kovik assigns Burnham and her crew to investigate an 800-year-old Romulan science vessel that they found bordering on the Beta Quadrant. The salvage operation is complicated by the courier's Mole, who escaped the Federation following a pursuit. With Booker's help, Burnham is able to track down the scavengers to the planet Kamau? Boy, I'm really struggling with the words. You think, Ben, I'm just a lowly chief petty officer. Like, they don't pay me to learn the names of things. I just lumber around the ship fixing
fixing Kim problems. You're the Harry Kim of our non-commissioned staff on board. Never mind. Yeah.
Meanwhile, Locke and Maul unsuccessfully bargain for information with the android Fred. That's right, an android named Fred, whom they also destroy. Commander Raynar pursues Raynor. It's Raynor, I think. Raynor is way more alien sounding. Pursues the couriers to the USS Antares, causing an accident that triggers an avalanche. The Federation ships are able to use...
You're pronouncing things strangely today for a reason.
Oh, 100%. I think I have some sort of weird virus. Remember the time on DS9 where people got sick and then they were unable to speak properly? I think that's just what's happening to me here. Some sort of weird Cardassian virus. The Federation ships are able to use their shields to protect a nearby city from this avalanche, but the couriers escape. Later, Kovic grants Burnham access to classified information from a journal recovered from a team of scientists aboard the Romulan vessel who were searching the progenitors. If that sounds familiar, it is from an episode, an early-ish episode of Star Trek The Next Generation, where, you know, they go on a scavenger hunt, finding a bunch of clues, and like a bunch of other people start joining in on the scavenger hunt. And at the end, they find out it is a message from the progenitors, which is a group of aliens that apparently seeded life throughout the galaxy. At least the galaxy, if not the universe. The Romulan scientists...
Don't look too hard at the canon on the subject of the chase, but yes.
Yes. The Romulan scientist, Velek, discovered a message from the progenitor aliens who had seeded the galaxy with life. So yes, everybody, what Star Trek The Next Generation did in, I believe, one episode is now going to be 10 episodes of Star Trek Discovery.
Yeah.
As we are about to find out, once again, this is going to be centering around like a thing, a piece of technology that can do great good or great harm, depending on whose hands it is. Basically, it is every season of Star Trek Discovery we have seen up until this point. The whole season revolves around like one particular thing on which the fate of everything hinges, and it is up to the Discovery crew to either obtain or stop or destroy or whatever this thing to prevent the other thing from happening. I don't know. This is a rough start for me.
Yeah.
But I'm curious to know what you thought about episode one.
All right. So... I went back and watched The Chase, not the crap game show, but the Next Gen episode, which in turn led me to go back and watch The Paradise Syndrome from the original series, which is decidedly at odds with The Chase and therefore with this episode of Discovery. But
yeah,
whatever.
Yeah.
If you can't remember why, it's too boring, but the short version is there's this the notion of the preservers, I think they call them, in the Paradise Syndrome, which sort of were responsible for, in a similar way, creating the humanoid races throughout the galaxy. Then Next Gen in The Chase tried to kind of pick up on that, and it was a bit weird because, like, the whole idea of it was, as I understand it anyway, it was that you know, when any sci-fi series pretty much has a preponderance of humanoid life forms in it, those writing lazy opinion pieces in the press particularly always go on about, oh, isn't it an amazing coincidence that that everyone there has got two arms and two legs and blah, blah, blah. And then they ruthlessly mock anyone who hasn't, which is also odd. But that's the deal. And no one really who watches sci-fi is massively troubled by it. Occasionally, science fiction throws in a little nod, a sort of wink to the audience about it. Probably outside of Trek, one of my favorites is Lots of Planets Have a North, courtesy of Doctor Who. All of these things. So the idea was, you know, okay, Next Gen decided they would create an explanation for it. And it's one of those slightly weird episodes because I'm not going to remember the guy's name, but you've got a scientist, well, an archaeologist, really, who comes to Picard, who was one of his former students, and brings him a lovely little, I'm going to say bribe, incidentally, in the form of stolen artifacts, and says to Picard, come on, let's go and solve the mystery of the universe, and that'll be fun. and he's not going to get involved because he can't leave the Enterprise. And then, you know, all and sundry turn up, that is to say mainly Romulans, and a hilarious Klingon who tries to bribe Data, if I remember rightly. And all of that goes on. It's a jolly good wheeze, and then they turn up, and all of these bits of a puzzle just activate a hologram. Frankly, seems like an awful lot of bother for being able to press play on a video, but still.
Yep.
And the progenitor goes, we made you all. This is our legacy, but don't tell anyone. Oh, that'd be dangerous.
Yeah.
That's pretty much it. And so that's that. And it was a lovely little episode that was probably an idea that didn't need exploring particularly, but they felt like they needed to.
Fine. Yeah.
And so we find ourselves here. And there were some good moments in this episode, if you ignore the start of an arc that can be filed under possibly who gives a fuck. Because what have we got? Well, we've got, I'll do my least favorite aspect of it first, which is the, you know, the sort of high speed pursuit stuff and the action sequence, which has now become such a sort of stock element of,
the stuff they threw into the last couple next gen movies to make them more exciting. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly that. And oddly enough, almost exactly in the same sort of aesthetic as well.
Yes.
I don't know how many races across sandy planets we need, but I guess quarries are easy to film in. And that's our deserts. So, yeah, I'm not a mad fan of that. But and Fred the Android, let's just quickly deal with that. Yet another Soong-type android knocking about. Well, what a shock.
Yeah.
Superb. Bit of casting, I
would
say.
Good performance, I thought.
Excellent performance. Probably let down slightly by the wig work, but still. Mm-hmm. That wig was awful, wasn't it?
Weird.
But I quite enjoyed Fred as the possibly slightly mad version of this android.
Yeah.
And in fact, that whole scene was quite good fun. But we've got Space Bunny and Clyde fucking shit up, so we can't linger too long on that.
Yeah.
We've got lots of little callbacky bits. I personally have always been a fan of the self-stealing stem
bolts.
I can't say it. Because, again, as an avid Star Trek Online player, by God, I've chased those fuckers down all over the galaxy.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, that was all fun. But a lot of this episode was... It almost feels like we're seeing yet another reboot of Discovery, which is a bold thing to do at the start of the final series, or final season, sorry, with only 10 episodes. That is a big choice.
Mm-hmm.
But fine, they've made the big choice. And what are we going to do with that? Well, we're going to introduce a new first officer.
Mm-hmm.
That was also an interesting choice, with generic space ears. And we are going to sort of pick this slightly odd idea for an arc. I must admit, the end of the first episode, all I really thought was, okay, I find a lot of what's in this episode interesting. I find a lot of it quite dull. I found myself angered by the fact that, as I alluded to at the start of this episode, nothing at all in the universe can happen unless the only people who can possibly do anything about it are Burnham and Book, who... Book is not that interesting a character.
Mm-hmm.
Burnham is at her best when she's being a Starfleet captain, oddly enough. And there was a lot of performance in that first episode where... It's all the stuff that people have criticized about Discovery kind of all plonked in one place.
Mm.
There's some ground being sown here, though. And don't get me wrong, there's good stuff to come here. The thing I did think was interesting was Space Bonnie and Clyde. We don't know a great deal about the pair of them. And I do think it's interesting, and I'm going to put the bet right here, the one that no one can identify, no one knows anything about, et cetera, et cetera. I'm going to say it right now. I think he is probably an unmasked Breen.
That would be interesting. They have mentioned them.
Yeah, I mean, the Breen have had a lot of name checks in the course of the start of this this run of Discovery.
Mm.
And, you know, there's a lot of sort of nudges and winks from Culber to, you know, I can find nothing about this man at all. It's almost as if he's from a species who are shrouded in secrecy and about whom we know nothing.
Ooh, yeah.
If anyone could think of any of those. So that's, you know, that's a fun thing, I suppose.
Yeah.
They created themselves a weird hurdle, by the way. You mentioned it in the start there, the thing about the millennium of the Federation, which it's out by a number of years. Like, I think about maybe 30 or something, I don't know. Mm. And they were, yes, but the, yeah, fair enough. But then why make this celebration of the millennium thing? I don't really understand.
They had to put something there.
Yeah, but I think this is part of the ongoing problem with Discovery is mm-hmm. that it so frequently sets itself up a hurdle that it then has to jump over, which would be great if the hurdle jumping was spectacular. In fact, quite often you just go, oh, right.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Weird thing, which in episode one they set up and episode two they deal with, is a load of people I noticed online watching this were really baffled at the presence of a wholly unremarkable, according to everyone on the ship at least, Tribble wandering around in the corridors on Discovery, because that would not cause a massive concern to everyone on that ship.
No.
But apparently it didn't, but we find out why later. The only other thing I really did like about this, and this is the... I continue to maintain that they are smashing it out of the park in terms of the aesthetic on Discovery, much like... In fact, to be honest, all the new Trek, like, yeah, it's so pretty. And I know that's all just technology, but this is people's imaginations. This is people who are working very, very hard at continuing to build a universe that, even though we know, is going to kind of at least be left aside for a period of time after Discovery finishes, i.e. 32nd century post-Burn Federation.
Yeah.
Like there's a labor of love gone into some of this visual work, but the effect that steals it for me in this episode is the puzzle box.
Mm-hmm.
So this is the puzzle box that contains basically the first first clue. There's some really delightful CG, and I think possibly some mixed practical effect in there as well.
Mm-hmm.
Hard to tell without watching. I have to say, I watched this episode in not the best resolution, unfortunately, because of crap internet connection where I was working. But anyway,
yeah.
That's good. So, yeah, this episode did feel a bit like, oh, we might be going out with a whimper, which is unfortunate. You've introduced some nice ideas, but I don't know, not keen on it.
Yeah.
However, you know, we've lacked faith before,
mm-hmm.
and we'll see where it goes.
We've been surprised. I have, you know, and I'm trying to maintain that optimism. Optimism is such a weird word. It's true. I am trying to be optimistic, but I don't think the other side of the coin is, you know, I'm hoping for a good season, but I'm worried we're going to get a bad season. I'm not worried about that. I haven't seen what I would consider to be a bad season of this show. I've seen, you know, the seasons have either been at their peak, like good, mm-hmm. but at their worst, they've been like okay or mid or meh, whatever you want to call it.
Yeah.
But I haven't seen anything that I would consider to be actively bad.
I've not been angry at this show in the way that loons have been on the internet.
No, it's been frustrating to me because I feel
that's it. Yeah.
I feel like this is a show that has, and as you've noted, I don't feel like the show is rebooted as often as you have, but mm. I do. I mean, it has rebooted a few more times than most shows ever do.
Twice officially.
Yeah.
And then I'm kind of scoring this as the third one, but only because it starts with, you know, kind of Etch-a-Sketch sort of refresh. It's sort of,
yeah,
oh well, here we are in episode one of the final season of this show. We're basically just going, yeah, we know the burn happened and we know you're in the future. Everything else that we know about the state of the Federation, who cares? Let's just go off on a normal season of Star Trek, which is such a weird choice.
Mm-hmm. I feel like for me, outside of the fact that it's kind of rebooted itself a couple of times, is the ground has always been shaky underneath their feet. And I don't feel like, to me, I don't feel like this crew or this show has ever found its voice. It just doesn't, you know, like, and it's hard to even describe, like, what that voice is. But, like, you know it when you see it. Like, Next Gen felt cohesive. DS9 felt cohesive. Voyager felt cohesive. And this show just never has really felt cohesive to me.
I'm going to say this right now, though, and because there's going to be, and we will probably do it at some point, there's going to be a retrospective of Discovery when it's ended.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that, you know, possibly with a little bit of retrofitting, but I think that when we get to the end of Discovery and we allow it to, you know, sit in the cellar and kind of age a little bit,
mm-hmm.
I think that it's going to have been far more cohesive than it felt like when we were on that journey with them.
It's possible. I
think that this season is going to, a bit like the end of Enterprise, you know, I think it's going to put together and maybe perhaps sort of go, oh yeah, we always meant to say that, but mm-hmm. they clearly didn't. I think it will pull it all together, and it will then make going back and watching where this began, because if you think about where this show began compared to where it is now,
mm-hmm.
Not just the time leap thing, but like so much of this show is just a different show. But I think pulling all those strands together is going to be, I think it's going to leave us with a better legacy of Trek than we necessarily think.
It'll be interesting. To me, I feel like Trek has had this problem since Enterprise. Like, Enterprise didn't feel cohesive to me until the final season. Then it finally felt like, okay, now they know, like, it's coming together. Unfortunately, it was the last season.
Such a genuine tragedy is the timeline of that show.
You'll hear it. Obviously, there's been all this love, and I feel like justifiably so, for the final season of Star Trek Picard. But the first two seasons of that show, like, feel very incongruent with the last season of that show. And that was a show that felt very shaky and wasn't finding its voice. And
I remember the time, like, the pacing of that first season of that was just garbage.
Yeah. And it was still an issue in the second season, but it was handled better. The only show to me that feels like cohesive is Strange New Worlds. And it had some bumpy moments in season two, but for the most part, that show has felt oddly cohesive sort of since the beginning. But, you know, that might be the example that proves the rule or whatever.
Self-contained episodes that follow the model of Star Trek when it's been at its peak throughout history.
Yeah.
Imagine that.
Yeah. Well, I mean, Next Gen, it took a while for Next Gen, though. It took a couple of seasons for Next Gen to find its voice or whatever. It just worked. It just clicked with Strange New Worlds really quickly.
Lower Decks did the same thing.
Though. Yeah, clicked very quickly as well.
In fact, interestingly, both of the animated, modern animated series, had the same thing. Is that they had the first few episodes where they were setting up the premise of what they were doing and the context, which felt like a little sort of mini arc.
Yeah.
And by the way, neither were particularly enjoyable on that little journey. I mean,
no.
They were both watchable, but neither of them felt great
when
they were in those first few episodes. Prodigy, particularly, the first three episodes of it, frankly, rough. Pretty rough. But then as soon as they hit the classic model of Star Trek of individual episodes where a thing happens, and they're not bottle episodes because no one hits reset at the end of them, but a thing happens and this is our storyline and we don't care too much about massive overarching things, even in Prodigy. By God, they're better. I feel really sorry, actually. I've said this before, but I feel really sorry for people who watched Prodigy and gave up after three episodes.
Yeah,
because what that show became towards pretty good. The end of that Mm-hmm. Yeah, and like the new season of it when whenever we go to watch it.
Yeah.
I think that's it's going to be another one where you go, oh shit, that's what this show was. Oh, why have they cancelled it?
Mm-hmm.
You know? But anyway,
track. What would you give episode one? I landed with 3.5 geeky glasses for this one.
Yeah.
I'm
afraid it only got 2.5 from me.
Ooh, wow.
Yeah.
And you sounded way more happy about it than I did.
It was plagued with more frustration and problems than it needed to have. And mm-hmm. and yeah, there are problems that, especially given that they were giving this kind of clean sweep start to this season, some of the things that have lingered from the previous thing, they're just the things that didn't need to. So that's why. And there's quite a lot of Route 1 work in here. Lark and Mole, Space Bunny and Clyde arc.
Honestly, Lark looks like one of those aliens from the last Kelvinverse movie. Almost exactly like one of those aliens. So maybe it's one of those. I don't know. Who knows?
So yeah, left me underwhelmed, but hey.
Speaking of under, Ben, episode 2, Under the Twin Moons.
Yeah, fair enough.
Following the events of the last episode, Commander Raynor defends his conduct during a hearing with President Lyra Rilek. Rilek? Anyway, Fleet Admiral Vance, your counterpart, Ben.
Space Daddy.
Assigns Booker to help Captain Burnham and the crew of Discovery track down Lock and Maul. Consulting Dr. Velik's journal, they travel to the Promillion,
yeah.
Burial planet of Lyric.
I'm tempted to step in at each of these words, but actually I'm kind of enjoying this.
Have fun. Eat it up, Ben. Where they believe the progenitor technology or a clue to it is hidden. You think I should take notes during this now, but I shan't. Where they believe the progenitor technology or a clue to it is hidden. Burnham and Saru beam down to Lyric and are attacked by drones. That actually was very reminiscent of a Next Gen episode as well. The planet where they sell all the weapons. With the Discovery unable to beam the two back up, they use an electromagnetic pulse to disable Lyric's automated defense system. Posing as a courier, Booker contacts Locke and Mull to attempt to track them down. Examining clues on the ruins of Lyric, Burnham and Saru determine that the couriers have misrepresented the clues and are incorrectly on their way to Beta Zed. After examining that old thing, and that happened in the chase as well. By the way, somebody got misdirected to a different place. After examining security footage, Booker learns that Mull is Melin. Sure, that's her name. Melin, daughter of his mentor, Cleveland Booker IV. Returning to the Federation headquarters, Burnham enlists Reinar in search for the progenitor's technology. What did you think of episode 2?
It gave me a little bit more hope because I think, well, first of all, the bit I find irritating was the fact that, having watched The Chase, it did kind of feel like, are we just sort of kind of remaking The Chase a bit here? Because it does have that about it. And actually, the arc of the season is basically just an extended version of that in some ways. And, you know, again, we'll start with the bits that irritate. The whole Booker discovering that Mal is Malene and the daughter of his mentor, Cleveland Booker IV. For fuck's sake.
Closest thing to family he's got, bruv.
Which is the only way you can possibly justify him being present for every freaking away mission that... whatever, just stop it.
He really is the Danny Pink of this show.
He kind of is, which...
He's less annoying than Danny Pink was, but...
Definitely, and certainly more useful. Danny Pink. Anyway.
Sorry to dig that name up.
Yeah, thanks for that. But yeah, I mean, there's some nice ideas in this episode, and it did sort of pick up a bit. The you know, the usual classic problem of beaming down to a planet and then the transporters are unable to beam them back because of electromagnetic disruption. I mean, honestly, Starfleet, I mean,
still haven't figured that out.
Still, you know, this is a bit of a sort of fun rough and tumble episode, and I, again, this slight sort of, well, all right, we are literally just doing space treasure hunt,
yeah,
which feels like a waste of a season, but okay, we'll do that if you like, as long as we've got something interesting coming out of it.
Have we?
Don't know, not yet. I guess the point of this episode, if there is one, is that we understand a little bit more about what the progenitors were up to, although not that much more. We get to see the sort of winding down, I suppose, of the relationship between Burnham and Saru, if that's what it turns out to be. And really, it just feels like a lot of this episode is to give us this justification for Booker remaining present at all bloody times in everything that happens. And then really, other than that, we've just got, and I guess the important, actually this is the important bit, isn't it, is that this is where Rayner's importance, his beginning of his redemption, et cetera, kicks in. And Burnham, you know, she's all about the second chances, and giving people big hugs, which is nice.
Yeah.
And, you know, and Rayner is not all about those things yet. Maybe he will be one day, but he's not right now. I mean, I'm joking about it, but actually Commander Rayner is, I find him quite an interesting character. I think he could quite easily have been and always remained the, you know, sort of Jericho character or whatever. He, you know, and Trek's got form for that. And maybe we're supposed to really dislike him, but actually I think a lot of the time, especially given the sort of juxtaposition between Rayner's approach and Burnham's approach, Rayner almost represents a more old-fashioned, possibly even Picard era, early Picard era anyway, Starfleet. This it's always rather British, sort of stiff upper lip. It's certainly more military. I think it helps us to remember that, you know, Rayner is a product of the 32nd century, and we are seeing, I think it's difficult with Discovery because the crew is predominantly, certainly the crew we ever meet, is, you know, the time traveling crew from back in the day, that, you know, they're operating outside of the context of the entire universe in which they live. And we are somehow just led to believe that they all stayed on active duty, having been brought up to date with a millennia of new technology that they didn't know anything about. And that's all fine. And every single mission, especially the really important ones, must all be conducted by that crew who've missed literally like a millennia of historical context.
Yes. That
should be fine, right? So actually, having Rayner or having somebody in Rayner's role, not only is it essential, it's massively overdue.
It should have happened.
It should have happened
in the third season. Yeah.
Absolutely. Absolutely so. So it's been good to see that. I mean, President Rilak has rapidly become the sort of the stand-in for the nasty admiral, because we've got Admiral Vance, who we know is not a nasty admiral. Incidentally, I continue to love Fleet Admiral Vance as a character. I think we see so little of him, but every time we see him, we learn something about him. And you know, my very long criticism of Discovery is the fact that we don't get to really learn much about people. I feel like the little doses of Vance, we've never wasted a scene with him. And that's the same is true in this episode. So, a lot was going on. A lot of it felt like just sort of hangover stuff that maybe we could have fitted in if we hadn't had a pointless bloody chase across the desert on not motorbikes. But here we are. We've ended up in episode two. We've picked up a load of the bits we needed to know. And most importantly, we've now got all the pieces on the table, as it were. We've got Rayna there. We know what the task is. We're not necessarily sure why some people are there. But we're good to go. But yeah, again, not the most inspiring of episodes. A very pretty episode. But that's probably the best I could say about it.
Yeah, I ended up giving this a 3. Mm-hmm. You know, it was just there. It felt like, you know, and part of it is like when you just watch enough Star Trek, you just start recognizing things that you've seen in other episodes or whatever. So some of it is just like, I feel like I've seen this before. And this did have elements of the chase in it as well. And it just felt like this is what this is going to be.
The chase did in one episode what this is going to
do in 10. Yeah. Yeah. That stuff isn't... I mean, maybe they've got something really good for the ending. We'll find out. But right now, this just... You know, the highlight of this episode for me was like Saru being like, good news, Captain. I can do the zoomies and distract them. I can distract the probes. Well, I'll go do zoomies. And
that was fun, actually.
It was fun. This almost felt... This was very, to me, bordering on an episode that didn't need to exist. Like, it almost... Yeah. It gives you almost nothing. It does give you some stuff in the Booker story, but... You've got to be invested in
but not really
book no and barely anything.
Yeah.
But and even then you've got to be invested in that character. It's so clear to me. Maybe they'll surprise me, but it's so clear to me that by the end of this, like, Booker and Michael are going to get back together and live happily ever after.
Oh, for sure.
Which you know is fine, but I just have no investment in the relationship, and it's almost completely Booker related. It's just from the get-go in season 3, I just wasn't just not into that character for whatever reason. Just nothing about it.
He's not a very Star Trek character, I think, is the
that
problem.
Is
and that does make sense because, you know, he's not Federation. He's basically a criminal who has, you know, been a necessary part of Burnham's life in the in-between phase, you know, while she was recovering from floating around in a red frock to being back at the Federation, which is fine. But then, first of all, the notion that the Federation would sort of keep him about as a sort of...
consultant?
Is kind of nuts.
He's an independent contractor.
Well, exactly, but by the time we start season 5, where we've had this miraculous reboot of the Federation, what the fuck is the point of him then? So they had to shoehorn him back in.
Yeah,
they've had to, and I do partly wonder whether this is just contractual, i.e. that they'd renewed his contract for, let's say, a 7-season run or a 6-season run.
Yeah.
When it got curtailed to 5, he was like, well, you're not fucking sacking me. We'll split the difference and I will be in season 5. I don't know what happened, but he is not a natural fit. His character is not particularly interesting. I mean, we will get to see, you know, a little bit of Booker magic powers at some point, no doubt soon. But it's this sort of, I don't know, if he has to be there, he doesn't have to be front and like every fucking episode, because it makes Burnham far less interesting.
Yeah. So what would you end up giving Under the Twin Moons?
It's scored the same. It was a 2.5 for me because I put them together as being a
that's true. They are one
disappointing start.
Yeah.
For and the fact that they can be lumped together in one episode score, really does kind of support what you're saying there to me, which is that, you know, some proper editing and some really efficient storytelling, and these two episodes would have been one episode, and you know, we've recovered some time for the rest of the season then.
Mm-hmm. Also, this might just be me, but I feel like some of the visuals have taken a bit of a hit
they did in this episode. Yeah.
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 I felt like I was getting that in some of the first episode as well. But,
oh, really?
Yeah.
I put some of that down in the first episode too, as I say, watching it with not the highest quality stream, unfortunately.
Ah. Well, I was definitely getting it in the first episode too, and I was watching it in 4K. So,
we do know from Strange New Worlds that where we've seen performance dip visually, it's because we later find out a scene that they have spaffed all the money on.
And if
it is anywhere near the quality of the expensive scene from the last season of Strange New Worlds, I should be happy.
Mm-hmm. We shall see.
Still one of the most stunning bits of work ever to appear in Trek. Yeah.
Okay, so that is the podcast for right now, ladies and gentlemen. But you can head on over to cinemageekly.com, where you can check out the archives of the show. And, of course, this is a listener-supported podcast. And there are some ways to help out there if you'd like. We have a Patreon, patreon.com/cinemageekly. We have our merch store. Do you have the button handy, Fleet Admiral?
Do you mean this one?
Geeklymerch.com.
Yeah, that's the one. Links for those in the show notes for this episode. You can also find us on Apple Podcasts. You can also find us on Spotify, Audible, and Pocket Casts, wherever you find good podcasts. Just search for I'm a Doctor, Not a Podcast. Hit subscribe, and that way you can join us next time, where we will talk about two more episodes of Discovery Season 5, Episode 3, Janal, and Episode 4, Face the Strange.